All right, last hour on a Wednesday. That means our weekly guest at this time is Scott Shanley, Husker Super Bowl champion, joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, we're going to dive into this right away. We will. I promise we will talk about some NFL. But Donovan Raiola is back. Do you know much about Donnie or know him?
No, I don't know him personally. I don't. I know, obviously, he was an assistant offensive line coach with the Bears. But I really don't know much about him as far as, you know, his style, the way he coaches, what he believes in. So I really don't have many answers as far as that goes.
So let's keep this general. So he's back. He's the assistant retained off of Scott's staff. What makes a – before you even talk about the personnel, what in your mind from your time in college, and I know you're on the opposite side of the ball, or what you saw in the NFL – what makes a good offensive line coach?
The guy has to bring a personality and an attitude to that position, coach. Every great offensive line I played with has had an offensive line coach who is a no-nonsense guy who just emits toughness, really. And, you know, when I was in Nebraska, it was Milt Tanniper, Dan Young. Yeah. Obviously, the pipeline, the lines that those guys were able to construct over the years were just dominant. And that Milt Tanniper's personality was that. Milt was a tough guy. Just he was tough. And then when I got to the NFL and played with our best offensive lines when I was with the Saints, when we won the Super Bowl was Doug Marone, went on to become the head coach for the Bills and the Jags. And Doug was the same way. He was from the Northeast, just a tough dude. And his offensive linemen played that way. So I think that the offensive line coach, if you're just not even talking about scheme or anything, that room – has to be the toughest unit on your team, and they just have to be gritty, and they have to understand that their job every single week is to move another grown man against his will and change the line of scrimmage, and that's how you win a lot of football games.
How much do you think a different approach at strength and conditioning could affect an offensive line group?
Well, I definitely think it has a huge factor because, first of all, everybody around the country right now is looking for the same type of body types. You know, when you go and you see you can watch Louisiana Tech, you can watch Georgia. It doesn't matter what level of major college football you're watching. Those guys all have the same body types. You know, the tackles are 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". You don't see many of the shorter, squattier guards and centers even anymore. You might see it more in the interior, but especially at tackle. They're trying to get those long bodies, long arms, keep defensive ends, outside linebackers away from the quarterback. So the strength conditioning program is huge, and it always has been in Nebraska. I think you've probably seen, we've already talked about the walk-on program and the developmental process of the Nebraska football program. That has not, that there's been no other position that's happened more than, because you look back at some of the offensive linemen who have played walk-ons and who become starting linemen at Nebraska, it was built through the weight room.
Scott, I'm going to hop over to the NFL with you here. And this is going to be a purely self-serving question here about the 49ers. They've been probably one of the better teams in the NFL the last 4 to 6 weeks. Obviously, losing Jimmy Garoppolo, they're kind of in a tough spot quarterback-wise. What do you think their ceiling is as a team if you're not looking at having Jimmy Garoppolo back until best-case scenario, the divisional round?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, for the 49ers, and their fans and everybody, I think the season is over. They're going to make the playoffs probably.
Sure.
I would assume. I think their defense is good enough. And they have Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey. If you get into a playoff game where your defense plays great and you can run the ball and you can have Shanahan out-gadget people, which he can do as good as anybody. I think he's one of the best play callers, if not the best play caller in the NFL. You can find a way to win a game, but I just don't think you can make that long run. You can go to the Super Bowl, you can win a Super Bowl without that guy at quarterback. And people will debate whether or not that was Jimmy Garoppolo. He fit great in the offense. It's unfortunate because I thought after the McCaffrey trade, I picked the 49ers to go to the Super Bowl at the NFC. I thought it was a perfect trade, but I don't know. You cannot mask the quarterback position in the NFL.
Scott Shanley joining us here on 1620. Would you like to tell us your thoughts on what happened there in the fourth quarter of the Saints-Buccaneer game?
Well, this year has been, I mean, you know, anybody who started watching the Saints 2006 after Sean Payton has been extremely spoiled because they haven't seen this type of football. It's weird to see a team find different ways to lose games every single week. And they've really struggled on the road, 1-5 on the road. And they got into this game against Tampa Bay, and the defense looks like the steel curtain of the 70s Steelers for 56 minutes. And then the last two drives, they can't figure out how to stop a two-minute offense. And it just baffles your mind. But it just – there's smart players in that locker room. Mark Ingram is one of the smartest, toughest, best football players I've been around in terms of knowing the game. And for him to go out of bounds 1 yard short of the first down, you just – when you're not winning games, when you're not winning division championships, or you're competing for one seed, your mind is in a different place. And that's just how it is. I think just like you get used to winning, you get used to losing too. And right now the Saints have issues, whether it's guys not being on the field, too many guys are hurt, but they're going to have to make some major decisions this offseason and probably start a rebuild. And they don't want to, but I think they're going to have to start rebuilding this roster.
Scott, I wanted to ask you another question about the Saints here real quick. Obviously, Jameis Winston came into the season as the starter, got injured, and then never got his job back. Is there any conversation about that locally? Is that something that people are talking about at all, or are there too many other issues with this team that's not getting a ton of run?
No, it is, and I would say probably 2 weeks ago it was more of a conversation. Right now, because the Saints are out of it, you know, they were hanging on by a thread getting in this NFC South division race and probably win it at 8-9. That's no longer going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's died out because, you know, the Saints have basically said Jameis Winston is not in our future plans. We gave him an opportunity. It was only 4 or 5 games. But really, Andy Dalton has not been the reason they've been losing games. And I think that's the easiest way. I think that's why the conversation has died out, because Andy Dalton has been playing pretty decent football, playing some of his best football. He's not the reason they're losing, so I think that conversation has kind of died out locally.
Hey, it would be a great storyline. Can we just continue to further it that A.J. Brown got the GM in Tennessee fired yesterday? I mean, if one of the things was about their roster construction, why on December 6th is all of a sudden that an issue that you fire the GM?
Well, word from there is that Vrabel and the GM didn't see eye to eye, and Mike Vrabel won that battle, obviously. Yeah. And I think it was just after a game where, you know, I, from what I've heard, Vrabel did not want to get rid of A.J. Brown, wanted to pay him. You go, you play the Eagles, who are on a roll, and A.J. Brown tears you up. I think that's Vrabel's way of going to ownership or whoever they're arguing with and saying, see, who was right? And they obviously made the move. It really did surprise me, though, because usually dysfunctional organizations make those type of moves in December, not teams that are in a playoff hunt and can probably cause some noise in the playoffs. You don't see them firing GMs very often, but it's the NFL, and there's personal issues that lead to all sorts of firings.
Scott, I want to stay on the Eagles there for a second. They beat up the Titans pretty good this weekend. 11-1 now. It seems like people are maybe starting to believe in Jalen Hurts and that whole thing a little bit more. How big do you think the gap is, if there even is one, between the Philadelphia Eagles and the rest of the NFC?
Well, I think there is a gap, and I'm one of those guys who really wasn't a believer in the Eagles. I called the NFC bad. I really think all the best football's in the AFC, and I constantly have to be reminded, hey, don't forget about the Eagles. Well, the last couple of weeks I've paid more attention to the Eagles. I think Jalen Hurts has played consistent enough football that you can believe that he can win a Super Bowl, but you look at other pieces of that team. That wide receiver core is really good. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line is probably the best in football. Their defense is playing outstanding. They have a really good secondary. If they can get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson back, who had a bunch of interceptions, Saints traded to him later in the preseason, I think the Eagles are the best team in the NFC. They've stayed very healthy this year as well. So when you tie that into their scheme they run offensively, they present challenges because Jalen Hurts can run the ball with his legs. I think they probably are the best team in the NFC, and they're going to be a tough out, especially if they get that number one seed.
Hey, there's three straight now that Kansas City has lost to Cincinnati. Does Cincinnati have the magic sauce to not let Patrick Mahomes go off?
They do, and I think sometimes psychologically, teams just have your number and they get in your head. And right now it feels that way, that Kansas City looks at Cincinnati and says, how do these guys have the magic formula? And really, the magic formula that nobody really talks about with Cincinnati, I know it's always, as long as these guys play, it's always going to be Joe Burrow beats Mahomes or Mahomes mm-hmm. beats Burrow. And it's kind of we all love the Brady-Manning comparison.
Yep.
But I think what gets lost in this matchup is how good Cincinnati plays Mahomes defensively. They control him. It's not like they go and shut him down. Nobody's going to ever shut down Patrick Mahomes. But they contain him enough to give Cincinnati's offense, who's good in its own right, their defense plays well enough to give Cincinnati an offense a chance, and Burrow seems to make the big play when he needs to make it late in the game to find a way to win.
Yeah, and that also, isn't that a game that, because, you know, Kansas City didn't get a lot of pressure, they didn't tackle. It's, at the end of the day, it just comes down to players have to make plays, correct? I mean, we could break it down so many different ways with scheme and, you know, right play call here, but isn't it when we close the book, don't we just say players got to make plays?
Exactly, and that's really what it comes down to. In those big games against really good teams, your best players have to make big plays. And I know people will talk about Mahomes doesn't miss Tyreek Hill. Well, I think in games like that, guys like Tyreek Hill matter. And you can't pay a guy, I understand, you can't pay a guy $20 million to keep him around for one game. But when you get into games like that where the Bengals can double-team Kelce and they like their matchups in other places, it makes it harder. Makes it harder on the Chiefs. So unless the Chiefs start to maybe run the ball a little more effectively and take some of that pressure off Mahomes, I think just because of the way they match up with the Bengals, it's always going to be a really good game.
Hey, help me here. And the tackling by Kansas City was shoddy. And then I go back to Friday night in the Pac-12 championship game with USC against a really physical offense. When did we start, and I don't say it just started now, but when did it become acceptable that when you're tackling for a turnover?
No, I don't know. I think we focus a lot defensively on ball disruption. We do all sorts of turnover circuits and turnover drills. But our understanding is if you're the first guy there, you're securing the tackle. If you're the second or third guy there, you're going for the ball. But that tackle has to be secure first. But there's a lot of guys that, you know, I think don't really want to tackle, to be honest with you. So they go for the ball because there's less physicality and less impact if you just, hey, I'm going to go for the football here and you miss it. Well, I was attempting for a strip. I don't think that's acceptable. I think a lot of these teams don't practice the way you need to practice, especially when it comes to taking angles, working together, vice tackling. One-on-one tackling is really hard. But if you're going to miss the tackle, miss him the proper way to give you the rest of your guys on defense a chance.
So walk me through, because I hear a lot of people say, well, they should practice 9-on-7.
Yeah. I mean, guys like me and the generation before me, when you hear 9-on-7, you all, when you say 9-on-7, I automatically want to buckle my chin strap. I want to tighten my chin strap a little bit more because that's the period in practice where everybody puts their shoulder pads on a little bit tighter. They put their helmet on a little bit tighter because it's run play, every single play. And it's inside run play. It's not toss sweep. It's not outside zone. It is inside zone. It is downhill running. And I don't think teams practice that much more, which is why I think you see the game go cyclical. If you're a team that can run the football inside and you can line up with a fullback, linebackers don't even know how to take on fullback ISOs anymore. They don't face it enough. So it's a tremendous advantage for you. I just don't think teams put enough emphasis on it in practice anymore because really a lot of teams don't see those teams that just are going to line up and smash mouth and run the ball right in your face.
Okay, Scott, I want to ask you a question here about quarterback situations. Which situation would you feel worse about if you are, in terms of long-term outlook, if you're the Browns with the money owed to Deshaun Watson, who played for the first time in 2 years and didn't look good, or if you're the Broncos and you're dealing with the guaranteed money that you owe Russell Wilson, who has more bathrooms in his house than he has touchdown passes on the season?
I think just because of age, I would have to go. I'm more worried about the Broncos because
okay.
The Broncos gave up a haul. They gave up a ton. And for Russell to play the way he's played this year, I know if I was a general manager of that team, I would think, oh my gosh, should we just sell the farm for a washed up player? Like is Russell Wilson done? Mm-hmm. Will we ever see the Russell Wilson we saw in Seattle? And so for you to worry about him and where he is age-wise, I think that's a bigger concern than for a guy who hasn't played in almost 2 years and you're hoping that at his age, he will find a way to play the way he did when he was having a lot of success in Houston.
Hey, quick thought. Deion to Colorado, go.
Hey, Colorado is the talk of college football. And I think I sat there, we all sat there last week, and the SpongeBob meme where Squidward's standing in his house looking out the window and Patrick and SpongeBob are playing outside and having fun. That's how the rest of us in college football felt because Colorado at 1-10 got more publicity than anybody else. It's fun to watch. I think he's going to accumulate a ton of talent. The difference is every single week you're going to be going against outstanding coaches and players in the Pac-12. I think Colorado, there's a chance they could end up going back to the Big 12, which would give Deion a chance to recruit Texas. where he spends a lot of time and where he really grew up with a lot of other kids. So I think it's a great hire for Colorado because they needed something. They needed a spark, and they definitely got it.
All right, Scott, as always, we appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely.
That's Scott Chanley on with us every week at this time.
A little more peaceful.
Yeah. I mean, we went over enough.
And there's stuff to talk about
yeah.
that week.
Yeah.
Apparently the 49ers are done. I'm sorry, Robbie.
Well,
it's all right.
Yeah, see, I'm not as...
I think if they can survive the regular season, because if you're the division winner, right, you get the first round bye.
On TV
or you could get the first round bye, right? And then all you have to do is get to the divisional round and maybe, you know, you're crossing your fingers, you got Jimmy G back.
But by the time, let's say you get to that point, by that time, hasn't Brock Purdy probably done enough that has gotten you to a good spot that you're comfortable, that all of a sudden you don't want a disruption because it's not like
maybe
Jimmy G just comes in and he's clicking right away.
It's true. That's a fair point. I wonder how, because I don't think Brock Purdy has to be that good for the 49ers to still make the playoffs, right? Because they're in a subpar division. I know Seattle's right behind them. As long as they beat Seattle, they're probably going to win that division. So getting to the playoffs is a huge challenge from the current position they're in. And Brock Purdy could be really mediocre in getting you there, right? So you could get to the divisional round and you're not impressed with Brock Purdy still, in which case you would be thrilled that Jimmy G is back. You know, if I hope you're right. I hope we're looking at 99 Kurt Warner. I'd be thrilled to death, right? And you'd be like, Brock Purdy's that guy.
We will rally
How
around
much
Brock
of an
Purdy.
Issue would that cause in San Francisco?
Well, because you got Trey Lance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, listen,
that's a good problem to have.
Haven't had to pay Trey Lance yet. So, yes, you maybe gave up a lot of draft capital for him. But if you find a quarterback, you find a quarterback and you're thrilled to death about it, all right? Just, I don't care if it's Trey Lance. Yeah. I don't care if it's Jimmy G. I don't care if it's Brock Purdy. And I probably am holding Chubba's experience at Nebraska a little bit against Brock Purdy. It's hard to separate the two in my mind. I can't believe they
you
came.
You and Connor.
Having a hard time not remembering they're from the same gene pool. Like, that's really, I'm struggling with that right now in my evaluation of Brock Purdy. But listen, I don't care who the 49ers quarterback is. As long as they can get it done within Shanahan's system, which I think is really good, and all the pieces that they have, which are really good, that's all I care. I don't care who it is. Gary, it could be you for all I care. Doesn't matter to me. Like, just somebody get it done.
I mean, Joe Montana coming out of retirement.
Yeah, and his Skechers.
Elvis Gerbach. What's he doing these days?
Not a lot, I don't think.
The Niners and the Chiefs, we exchanged quarterbacks.
A couple times.
That was
Alex,
the thing.
Elvis,
back then.
Joe.
I liked Elvis Gerbach. I was a big Gerbach guy.
Steve Bono.
Yes. Yeah, I wasn't a big Steve Bono guy. I was a big Elvis. I liked Elvis Gerbach.
Picture that bootleg touchdown against the Cardinals in '95. Probably, still running.
Probably just because I liked his name. Elvis Gerbach's a real strong name.
Yeah, I mean, you have Finney from Michigan quarterbacks.
You don't get a lot of
Rick Leach.
You don't get a lot of
Harbaugh.
Elvises anymore.
No, you do not. You do not.
You don't get a ton of them.
No.
I low key really liked. I know this is dumb. I really liked Nick Mullins for like a hot minute.
Didn't he have one good primetime game?
He had like a He had an awesome. And I had watched him before that, and I was like, there might be something there. And then he had that huge primetime game, and I was like, whoa. But he's not good at football.
Nick Montana.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, the discussion for the majority this morning has been about Donovan Raiola. We got some really good emails from both sides of it.
Okay.
And I highly recommend, Robbie and I spent 45 minutes at the beginning of the show going in depth on all the different angles of why this is happening and what is next. So I highly advise you, if you'd like to, listen to that. That's up on the radio replay
page. Listen to Robbie's conspiracy theory.
Listen.
I'm all for it.
Could I give you a conspiracy theory? Here, I'm going to float this, and then we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
Because I let people respond and just chew on it. So the defensive coordinator job is still open.
It is.
You're not having defensive assistants hired, so you've got to consult with your coordinator because you've got to sign off on these guys.
Theoretically, yes.
Marcus Satterfield says, you know what, that's a guy I can work with. I'm going to keep him. So all these names that we're talking about for DC, I'm going to give you a conspiracy theory.
I'm ready.
So Trev Alberts did the legwork, talked to a lot of people, talked to people that he was not going to hire, but he wanted an assessment of his football program.
Mm-hmm.
What if one of those guys that he talked to was named Gary Patterson, that wants to get back into the game in 23 but doesn't want to be a head coach but has very good defensive experience and has some familiarity with Matt Rhule.
And
I'm just going to I feel like I'm lacking in matching your conspiracy theories today. I'm just going to throw that out
there. I like it.
What if you got a conspiracy theory that Trev Alberts actually is helping Matt Rhule pick his DC and it's Gary Patterson?
Let's
conspiracy, by the way. I'm just adding to this. So. But if it happens, I'm going
to
take.
Let's add another layer to this. If you believe the rumors in the past, Gary Patterson has had interest in the Nebraska football program. So not only do some of the stars line up, but you go back in the past, you see, Gary Patterson, big fan of Nebraska football. Maybe Trev has already talked to him. Maybe this was part of the conversation already.
Whether this is just fun to just throw out there, I do wonder. Like, Gary Patterson wants to coach in 23, but he's not going to be a head coach.
No.
Why wouldn't he want to be a defensive coordinator somewhere?
That seems right up his alley.
Yeah, we're talking about younger guys and the Rhule formula. He actually would have a familiarity with Patterson because they coached against each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder what Gary Patterson does in 23. Because I got to imagine that he wants to be – he doesn't – life might be okay in Austin, but I got to imagine that he wants to be somewhere.
He loves teaching.
Yeah, back where he's on the field and stuff.
Yeah, he wants to coach.
Yeah, but we haven't really heard anything. But you're right. His name has been thrown around at Nebraska for a while. Maybe that's a guy we should insert into the discussion about DC.
Let's do it. I think it's more realistic than Glenn Schumann from Georgia.
Oh, so you've taken out of my conspiracy theory that this might have legs.
Listen,
I don't know anything.
I'm going double conspiracies this morning. We're going Jim Leonard. That's why Donovan Raiola was retained as the Jim Leonard whisperer. And then the reason Gary Patterson was being talked to by Trev Alberts was he already had Rhule locked up. We're like, hey, let's find us a DC.
You
might as well just hire them both at this point.
Well, then
you can combine
then
your
there conspiracies. Would be there'd be confusion on the person about, okay, well, look at the money we're spending. What are we getting?
Exactly. See, but that's where your $7 million pool comes in. You've got two highly paid coordinators at defense. Boom, there we go.
Yeah.
There's your $7 million
at work. Just on a side note, Nebraska or not, I wonder what Gary Patterson's going to do in 2023.
Oh, it's a fair question.
I think he'd like to coach.
This doesn't seem like a long-term position with him in Austin.
No, and I don't know, like, if he went to a place as just a DC, you're not saying, hey, Gary, we need you here for 15 years.
Yeah. No, it's a short-term deal.
Going to a place that needs their defense fixed.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
I agree.
We'll throw that out there.
Maybe.
Yeah. We got some emails on both sides of the Donovan Raiola. That's coming up next. Brandon Vogel here in about 15 minutes on 1620 The Zone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.